This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always find the show podcasted. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast, or the podcasts are available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. You can always get in touch with the show. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page. Not only are the podcasts available there, but you can always leave a comment for the show right there, charlestonsportsradio.com, and then on our show page. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text the show, 843-608-1734. Or give us a call, 843-721-9500, to join the conversation. It's Donor Appreciation Week at CSL Plasma in North Charleston. I'll be back out at one of their locations tomorrow. Come say hello, donate plasma. I'll be there, of course, tomorrow, 12 to 3. We'll be doing the show from one of the locations in North Charleston. I don't have the address in front of me, but it's about 3700 Rivers Avenue, the one across over by the hospital over there. Bobby will be out today at CSL Plasma across from the Northwoods Mall, that location. Two of them in North Charleston. So Fan Talk will be doing the show from CSL Plasma coming up this afternoon. And stay tuned for that. Donor Appreciation Week. Now, I've talked plenty about donating plasma. I've done it myself. They pay you on the spot. You walk out with the money. They give you $100 the first time you donate plasma. It's not much different than donating blood. It takes a little longer, a little more time consuming. So you have to devote if you're doing it for the first time, it's going to take you about 2 to 3 hours. So I know that may turn you off, but you know, $100 plus this week for Donor Appreciation Week, they're giving away all sorts of things as well. Last year, apparently, I won a Bluetooth speaker, but they never told me, so I didn't get the Bluetooth speaker. Maybe they just told me that this year to help me feel better or entice me. Like, hey, actually, you won a Bluetooth speaker last year. Does it count if you never get the speaker? Right, that doesn't count as winning it. But good people over there at CSL Plasma, I'll be out there again tomorrow, and Fan Talk will be out there this afternoon. You can go see Bobby and donate some plasma later on today as you're getting off of work in over there in North Charleston. I got a wedding coming up in a couple weeks.
Ooh, here we go.
Yes. Now, I've got a bad – well, I don't know if it's a bad habit. Maybe it's a good habit. But now, like, you know, I have – just from being in broadcasting, we've gotten very lax. You see coaches now no longer wear suits. But for a long time, like, you'd always wear a suit to the basketball games. Not football, not baseball. Whatever reason, basketball, even for the broadcasters, you'd wear a full suit. I've gotten a little more lax where I don't wear a suit as often anymore. But my point being, over the years, I've you know, I got a handful of – I got quite a few suits because I've needed them professionally. For speaking engagements, I do weddings, which is true. That's not a joke. So, you know, so I have plenty of suits. But I've gotten in the habit or trend now of whenever I have a wedding, I find myself going and purchasing a new outfit for that wedding.
Sure.
So I got a wedding coming up in a couple weeks.
Here we go.
I won't be on the air for a few days. And it's an outdoor wedding in July.
Ooh, tough. Now, don't give up the location, but how are we looking as far as temperature goes? Have you checked anything? What's the normal temp wherever you're going
to
go?
I'm not afraid to share. It's back up in Connecticut.
Okay.
I do know. So that's a big difference, right? Outdoors July in South Carolina, a little bit different than Connecticut. I do know on Father's Day, I talked to my father, of course, on Father's Day. They said it was they had a golf with jackets on this past weekend. It was like 55 degrees.
Wow.
So usually, I mean, I grew up in Connecticut. It may not be as hot as South Carolina, but it gets just, I mean, you know, it's still 90 degrees and humid usually in Connecticut by July. So I anticipate it may not be quite as warm as here, you know, where it's like supposed to get to 97 today. It may not be quite that hot, but it's going to be hot enough outdoors in July. And it's humid, plenty humid up there as well. So, yeah, so this is a big issue now. How do I dress for a wedding in July? So I figured, my buddies and I that are all going to this wedding, we're all trying to figure out, like, what are we wearing? What are you going to wear? Outdoor wedding in July. I've never gone to an outdoor wedding in the summer. It's always been indoors. I was at a wedding a couple years ago in the summer where the air conditioning was not working at the facility, And we were indoors, and that was so hot. So I can only imagine. Outdoor. Hopefully there's a nice breeze. Outdoors in July seems tough.
Yeah, that's never good. I would have left. Sorry about the married couple. You got my gift. Appreciate you. I'm out.
Yeah, it was a little tough. I got to be honest. It got warm in there. But my question, because I consider you, this is radio, so people can't see, but we obviously work together. You know, you're a well-dressed man.
Oh, I appreciate that.
I consider you, I looked this up because I thought it would be like, you know, in Spanish where they have an A at the end of the word if it's a feminine, if it's for a woman or a, yeah, just based off of gender roles, right, I guess?
Sure.
And an O for masculine. But I don't think that applies here. I was going to say a fashionista.
Ah,
but then I thought, well, maybe you're more of a fashionista.
Sure.
But then when I Google it, it looks like just fashionista is... It's all encompassing.
I'm cool with that. I don't mind that.
Here's my question.
Here we go.
I'm thinking of outfits, all right, or what I'm gonna wear. I was talking to a buddy about this, and there's a popular look today where you go with almost like high waters and no socks.
That's what I'm wearing right now, actually. Yeah.
So I may already have the answer because we're similar in height. My buddy said that's a look for people. I don't want to say shorter people. I'm not calling you short, but if you go with that look, he said that's a look more for people that aren't quite as tall. Mm. I'm about 6'3" with shoes on. You're right there with me. You sport the look, so I guess I already know the answer. Do you think that if you the taller you are, maybe the more awkward it looks to go with the no socks, a little bit of a high waters look?
No, I don't think so. I think it's normally, Luke, I would say it's about your body type build. Like how if you're more slim, I think it works better to do the high water look. Yeah, I mean, a perfect wedding look for me is, you know, always go tighter pants because especially mm-hmm. with short guys, I've noticed this when you put on tighter clothing, and this is actually from, you know, the Italians, they say this, the kings and queens of fashion. If you're shorter, you wear tighter clothes to be able to look taller. Now, I think that with you and I, we don't need to do that, but I would say that when you have the pant rolled up with some loafers on, you know, and you got the matching coat jacket, make the pants a little tighter, boom, you're good to go.
Interesting. I like that breakdown.
I support the look of the high waters every single day.
Yeah?
Every single day. Oh, yeah.
I've never done it before. We've talked about this before. I know you don't wear socks.
Right, rarely.
Yeah. I'm a big sock guy, so I've never done the look before. But I'm thinking, I don't know, summer wedding? All right, looks a little comfortable. I'm looking up at photos of these guys. That's the new trend. A buddy of mine said, no, you're too tall. You can't pull that off. That's not a look for you.
Nah, I disagree. I disagree with your friend. Yeah, if you throw on some loafs with the high water pants and just make sure everything's looking clean and nice, a little bit tighter on the fit when it comes to the pants, you'll be the king of that wedding before the night's over.
I may have to look into that. Now, in terms of the full outfit, I'm definitely going business cash. No tie, open collar. So I'm thinking I'm going to have to do a little shopping this weekend maybe to see if I pick up a new jacket or something, new blazer. But I got a couple of different thoughts. One of my thoughts, I may go guitarist of the Lumineers where you go with suspenders, no jacket,
yeah,
shirt, suspenders, roll up the sleeves, nice pants, you go to the wedding that way.
That's a move. That's always a good move. Now, I will say with that look, the high water look might look a little different.
I don't know if I do high waters.
Yeah, though. So you'd have to pick one or the other, essentially, if you're going to, you know, if you. But, hey, that's a great look. That's a Peaky Blinders look right there.
That's true. Yeah, I have seen the photos.
It's a good look.
Yeah. Go suspenders, roll up the sleeves. Maybe in that case, maybe I'd throw on a tie. I'm a bow tie guy, too. Maybe I'll do a bow tie. I don't know. Open collar. Not a bad look. Or you go jacket, pants, and then I got to that, – see, that's the thing of it's a summer wedding. How summery do you get?
Do I get a
flashy shirt with, like, maybe flowers on it?
Ooh.
Do I go, like, a salmon jacket? You know, how summery do you get with the look for a summer wedding?
I'll tell you this right now, Luke Morrow. You can never, ever – go wrong with a salmon jacket.
Ooh.
Ever.
See, my mother suggested a salmon jacket. I don't have any salmon jackets. Nothing close to it.
Mama Morrow's a smart lady. Smart lady.
So I may have to look into that. We got to figure this out. I got a couple of weeks to figure it out. It's very important. You got to look the part at a wedding. You got to look nice.
Yeah, just send me some photos when you're out shopping. You know, if you're downtown, hey, I'll come meet you, see what's going on, making sure we're good. I'll go in there with you and say, let's get a little tighter pants
That's
here.
Right.
Let's get a tight suit on. Let's get ready to go.
That's right. Look out, Joseph A. Bank. The Morrow Midday Show is rolling in there together. We're going to figure this thing out.
With your suit deals, Joseph A. Bank, we're coming.
That's right. You're what's the one you're gonna love? How you look? Who's that? Like Men's Warehouse or something? We're heading over there.
Brooks Brothers.
Yeah, you have to get this straightened out. I don't know about that. I don't know if the high waters would look for me, but I may be willing to check it out.
Yeah, see how it looks, and it's all about the shoes as well. You got to have the correct shoes on for the high water look.
That's true. Last thing I'll say is I've also considered, but I think this is a bit much. I'm a big three-piece suit guy. I like vests.
Mm.
So what if I ditch the jacket, wear a vest?
Vest only. Another Peaky Blinders look. Right
oh.
There. Yeah, that's the suspenders and the vests are Peaky Blinders 1.0.
This show may be for me after all.
I know.
I like these looks, these outfits that
I'm hearing
about.
The Italian rivals as well. You'd love them. You'd love them.
I may have to check this show out. I'm also concerned about just traveling. Unfortunately, flights, really since the start of the pandemic, but it's crept up again, flights being canceled. We love Chris Mad Dog Russo around here. He went on a great rant on his radio show yesterday. Just to give you the foundation of this, he's about to take a call, so he's introducing the caller at the very beginning of this clip. And then the caller is from, I think, Madison, Wisconsin, if I remember correctly, and Russo's kid goes to school there. So then that leads to a whole rant, and then the ending is the best because then he tries to bring it back to the caller. Anyways, here's Chris Russo ranting about the airlines on his radio show on Sirius XM yesterday.
We'll get Jason in Madison, Wisconsin. And speaking of Madison, Colin Russo did not get home this weekend, so I got a burr up my fanny on Delta Airlines. Delta for the birds. The airline should be embarrassed. I'm getting off the deep end here, but the airline should be embarrassed that all of America couldn't fly anywhere for the last 3 or 4 days. 22% of flights canceled on Thursday, 18% of flights canceled on Friday. Hey, Delta, I don't need an apology to NBC. You know, your job is to make sure you get a plane to Madison, Wisconsin, and get my kid home for Father's Day weekend. Go ahead, Jay.
I love that ending. After that rant. Go ahead, Jay. Finally gets to the caller. Imagine following that up. Like, you don't even want to say anything if you're the caller anymore. Russo's all fired up about the airlines. Airlines have been a problem with all these canceled flights. Love a good Chris Russo rant. Now, this was on his radio show, and this wasn't planned. He got kind of distracted. What do you think of just in general if, like, celebrities take to Twitter to complain, let's use the same example, about airlines or, like, a canceled flight or delay, if they're a celebrity complaining on social media?
Yeah, I don't know if they understand the pain of what you actually go through. Like, Luke, my mother was a flight attendant for 25 years. I get some flight benefits. I've been trapped in airports for 3 to 4 days. So when celebrities go on and they're like, hey, at Delta, I missed my flight today, even though it was probably their fault at the beginning of it. You have a first class ticket. You're definitely going to get on the flight. Cancellations happen. I don't really like people complaining about it. I saw Bobby Carpenter, who does radio in Columbus,
yeah.
Former Ohio State linebacker, went off on Delta.
Really?
Like a six thread, tweet about Delta and how basically it was just one canceled flight. Get
uh-huh.
over it. Like, yeah. I know it's a big problem. There's no doubt. I fly all the time. Get over it. Yeah, come on. Take the next one.
Wow. We've had Bobby on the show a couple of times. We're going to have him come on, and we'll debate about this.
He also saved, college football. So thank you, General Carpenter. We appreciate you.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of times social media is used to complain, and especially if it's somebody of, like, higher standing, that their problems may not be as brutal as yours. I usually don't like it, but I will say when it comes to, like, the airlines, a lot of times that's the only way you get a good response is on Twitter. So in that sense, I will defend them that, otherwise you're going to be on hold for 2 hours and, hard to even talk to somebody or talk to somebody at the airport. That's usually the easiest way. So sometimes, unfortunately, right, sending off a tweet that makes somebody look bad, then they'll get back to you quicker on Twitter than they will on the phone or even in person. Yesterday, while we're playing clips from other radio shows, I was talking about, we played the clip from the comedian Sebastian Maniscalco talking about fathers paying with cash. Here is my guys Covino and Rich on, they were filling in on Fox Sports Radio yesterday on our sister station, and one of the hosts, Steve Covino, was telling a story about his father always trying to pay with cash as well.
My dad is like an old school Jersey Guido, right? Looks like Father Guido Sarducci.
Your dad looks like Dennis Eckersley and Ravishing Rick Rude.
He does. He's got that Yanni look to him, but slick back hair, mustache. And he's always that guy that no matter what the price is,
Yeah, but what about in cash?
He's always that guy.
Cash money.
Sir, you're so at now, sir, you're at Chipotle.
Yeah. Hey, yeah, I said, was that $14.99? How about $10 cash?
Sir, it doesn't work that way. It works that way at car dealerships, mattress stores.
And the gas station.
The gas station, yeah, 10 cents.
Yeah, gas has gotten so bad that you have to start paying with cash just to save the 10 cents on the gallon or whatever it is that they charge for the car. But that's fun. Sebastian Maniscalco put the clip, son. That was talking about it yesterday. We get that clip now. I don't know if this is like an Italian thing, and I'm not looking to commandeer some sort of smart business sense. Sebastian's Italian. Steve Covino's Italian. You know, my father's Italian. My father would do the same thing. Not at a Chipotle. Not at Sears. But certainly would offer up. I don't know if this is just a father thing or if it's just smart business. Trent, does your father ever try to pull the, hey, will you lower the price if I pay you in cash right here, right now?
No, Luke, I think that it might be more of a regional thing, quite honestly. You know, my pops is from Texas, Louisiana, Texas, now lives in South Carolina. He'll, whatever the price is, he's like, yeah, he's never going to haggle with it. And he's not a big cash carrier. Yeah, you know, that's the thing. A lot of people nowadays, you know, don't carry cash. I do have respect for people who just pull out a wad of cash, you know, in a rubber band and start counting it out and then pay for their pizza. I mean, that's the absolute best.
That's true. I don't think I've gone to an ATM in the 4 years I've lived here.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a cash guy. All plastic. I use all cards. You ever go to the ATM? You ever have cash on you?
Yeah, sometimes. I like to have it. Playing golf, I mean, you want to have cash for the for the cart guys. So that's really the only time I go to the ATM is to get cash for golf.
That's true. When I'm traveling, I do try to have cash. You never know. You run into a spot for whatever reason. Most places now do, obviously, just about everybody takes card, but you never know. You get into a situation, sometimes you got to have cash on you. So it's always good to have.
Yeah, carry cash while you're traveling. Just, you know, a couple dollars to whoever's helping you out.
That's true, especially for the tips, right?
Yeah.
You go to a hotel, whatever, you got to tip the guy, bringing the bags up to the room. By the way, I've gone to a lot of hotels. I haven't seen that in a long time.
Oh, there's like no more bellhops. Yeah, unless you're at like, you know, the Charleston place downtown or something. That's about it.
Yeah, that's true. On the text line, somebody said, white suit, open collar. Go with the Saturday Night Fever look like John Travolta or even Tony Montana. Chicks dig it. Yeah, that's not a bad look. Hey, I was the only guy at my senior prom to wear the white suit. I love a good white. That's why I always liked Rick Pitino.
Of course you were.
Oh,
of
yeah. Of course you were. Love the white suit. And at a wedding, I'd probably go white suit as well. Right, sorry, honey, in your white dress. Right, I love a good white suit. Maybe that'll be the look. And I'll bust some moves, too, like Saturday Night, like John Travolta back in the day. Hey, when we come back, we'll talk about quarterbacks with the transferring quarterbacks with the most pressure. Get to that. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Which transfer quarterback has the most pressure on them in college football this year? Of course, Spencer Rattler's on that list. Where would we rank Rattler? He's one of seven guys. We have more transfer quarterbacks than that, but I think there's seven guys that have kind of big expectations with their new school this year. We'll organize and order them. But first, here was Spencer Rattler on the Zach Gelb show the other night on CBS Sports Radio, answering a couple of questions as he gets ready to take over as the new quarterback of the Gamecocks. Here was Rattler the other night.
I mean, I think I could take my game, you know, to another level this year if I just buy in the film room, do what my coaches tell me, and we go out there and compete as a team. If everybody plays well, then everybody's going to have highlight success and all that. So that's what we're focused on first, but you know, I still think I could play very well this year, and we'll see where the cards roll next year. But we're really focused on this year, not looking too much into the future, but I'm still confident.
I respect that, but this time last year, people were talking about you as a first-round quarterback, a number one overall pick potentially. Where's your belief level that you could get back to where the world's making those claims and kind of projections about your career moving into the future?
You always want to think of yourself as the best guy, so my mindset hasn't changed, and you know I'm just going to keep putting in the work to try to get back to that first round, whatever, and get to it. But the main focus right now is being up here, just working with the guys, really buying in, creating that chemistry on the team, and I'm excited for it.
What do you say to people who doubt you and say what happened last year at Oklahoma is the quarterback that you're going to be and there's a reason why you had to transfer and had to leave that school?
You know, you can't really get bought into what people say. You know, that's something I've learned in my college career so far, you know, in my career overall. So I really don't focus on that. You know, definitely getting older and being able to go through adversity, you know, helps you with that. So, it doesn't faze me.
What do you want people to know about you? There's been so much that has been talked about, and there's been so much of a narrative, good and negative, built up about you. What do you want the person listening to this to know about Spencer Rattler?
Oh, I'm just a confident guy, you know, fought through adversity, still fighting, and, you know, will never quit and always be about his team, be about his work, and be about his business. So I think that's the mindset you got to have in life. And, you know, I'm confident but humble at the same time. So that's how I describe myself.
What's been some of the best advice that you've received in the last year, just wondering, Spencer?
Probably from my dad, just talking about, hey, going back to, you know, really, really, really diving into it and, you know, knowing God has a plan. There's a reason you're here. God has a plan. So, you know, that's been my mindset, and there's a reason I'm here, and we're just putting in our work every day and keeping our head down and see where it ends up.
That was Spencer Rattler on CBS Sports Radio the other night on the Zach Gelb Show. When we look at quarterbacks that have transferred in college football, which ones have the most pressure on them this year? Where would you put Spencer? Does he even have a lot of pressure on him coming into Columbia? Here's my top six, and then we'll figure out where to put Spencer Rattler. But I think the only six quarterbacks who transfer that truly have some sort of pressure on them, because there are a lot more quarterbacks than that transfer that will be starters elsewhere. Michael Penix Jr., right, transferred out. Bo Nix is now starting at Oregon. But, they're not really on the national radar. For me, number one is Caleb Williams, right, at USC. The guy that beat out Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma. Caleb Williams joining Lincoln Riley at USC. You have a big brand. You have a conference there for the taking. You have high expectations. They're the favorite in the conference, despite winning only four games a year ago. You have Lincoln Riley in that offense. He played with Lincoln Riley, so you don't have the learning curve. He already knows the offense and the coach. We know what Lincoln Riley has done with past quarterbacks, turning them into Heisman contenders, if not winners. So I think Caleb Williams certainly number one. Big brand, team expectations, familiarity already with the offense, flashed at Oklahoma, is considered one of the top three quarterbacks in the country. Right, he's right there with C.J. Stroud, Bryce Young, and those two did not transfer. He did, so therefore, he has the most pressure on him because he's theoretically supposed to be the best of the transfer quarterbacks. He has to live up to that billing. Number two, I would say, is Quinn Ewers at Texas. Similar reasons, but we haven't seen Ewers yet. At least we've seen Caleb Williams, and you've seen that potential and what he's capable of. Ewers, I don't know, we just hope he pans out at Texas. He was the number one quarterback in his class before, you know, reclassifying to get to Ohio State early to earn money. But otherwise, he'd be the number one quarterback, you know, in his class. So you have the number one quarterback at a big brand at Texas. We always talk about his Texas back. You have a wide-open conference. Texas has the second-best odds to win the Big 12. You have an offensive coach in Steve Sarkisian. You're coming off a very disappointing year a year ago when they were under 500 and missed a bowl game. You have probably the best running back in the country in the backfield with you. And Texas fans are going to expect, actually probably all college football fans will have pretty high expectations for this kid immediately. I think those two are the clear top two guys with the most pressure on them from transferring quarterbacks. Then we would get to like the next tier. And number three, I would probably put Max Johnson, who transferred to Texas A&M. We've had his father, Brad, on the show before, Super Bowl winning quarterback. He played at LSU and now at Texas A&M. The reason why I put him at number three, it's twofold. Number one, well, it's Texas A&M. The expectations are there, especially with the trash-talking from Jimbo and the fact that they pulled in the best recruiting class ever this offseason, and they haven't made it to the playoff yet. So Texas A&M, since bringing in Jimbo Fisher, they've always had that pressure on them. And now you're bringing in a quarterback who's already started in the SEC. So it's not like Quinn Ewers playing for the first time. We know what he's capable of. He knows the conference. He's going to know his opponents, especially LSU. He's replacing a guy who transferred out and beat Alabama a year ago. So that's kind of the starting point when you want to try to match up to the person before you. Right? Just like you get into a new relationship, you want to be better than all the other significant others, of course. Max Johnson, you're stepping in for a guy that, while Texas A&M did have a great year last year, they did beat Alabama. Right? What can you do against Alabama this year? And he's already played in the SEC. He has that experience. They have the expectations for Texas A&M. I put Max Johnson number three. Number four, sticking in the SEC, I would say Jackson Dart transferring to Ole Miss, because Ole Miss was a top 10 team at one point a year ago. You have Lane Kiffin in that offense. You have to replace, again, going back to replacing the guy before you, Matt Corral, who had a big-time year and got drafted. So now the expectations, fair or otherwise, are going to be that Dart, you're stepping in, you're going to have to get similar production. Maybe not necessarily exactly as good as Matt Corral, but there can't be a huge drop-off. And with Lane Kiffin running that offense and the expectations, and it is the SEC, I put him number four. Number five, I go at Keaton Slovis transferring to Pittsburgh. Look, they won the conference a year ago. And their quarterback that he's replacing, Kenny Pickett, highest drafted quarterback in Pittsburgh history, broke all sorts of records, played great last year, and helped them go and win the ACC. So just like the examples with Texas A&M and Ole Miss, part of that pressure and expectation is about who you're replacing. If you're replacing Howard Stern or an actual thing that happened with Rush Limbaugh with his passing, right? When you're replacing a guy like that, the pressure is much higher on you, as opposed to you're stepping into a situation where the previous guy got run out of town because he wasn't very good. You don't want to be the guy that replaces the guy. You want to be the guy that replaces the guy who tries to replace the guy. Keep up with that line of logic. But for Slovis going to Pittsburgh, you have to try to replace Kenny Pickett, who, I mean, broke Dan Marino's records, was drafted higher than Marino. And they're the defending conference champions, so now Pitt fans believe, like, hey, we can go win this thing again. Slovis, I put number five in terms of most pressure for quarterbacks who have transferred. And then number six, I would say Dylan Gabriel, who's at Oklahoma. He's back with the offensive coordinator he had at UCF when they were a very prolific offense. Oklahoma struck out on keeping Caleb Williams or even Spencer Rattler. Now Dylan Gabriel is supposed to come in and be that replacement. So you see the theme here. Who are you replacing? And big shoes that you're filling in for. And then, of course, you have Brent Venables, first year. He's never been a head coach before. And Oklahoma, they have high expectations. They always do. And they're the favorite still to win their conference. So Dylan Gabriel I put at number six, which may be a little low, but I put him six behind those other guys for the reasons explained. Those are the six quarterbacks in the transfer portal that I think have the most pressure. Caleb Williams, Quinn Ewers, Max Johnson, Jackson Dart, Keaton Slovis, Dylan Gabriel. Then we get to Spencer Rattler. And I really don't know where I would slot him if he would have cracked the top six. I think locally there's going to be pressure on Spencer Rattler. Right? If you're a Gamecock fan, you probably have high expectations for him, because on paper, he's the most talented quarterback South Carolina has ever had. Therefore, he should perform like it. A year ago, we were talking about Spencer Rattler being the number one pick and the Heisman winner. So you know that the potential, you'd like to think, is still there to perform at a high level. I think locally, here in the state, amongst Gamecock fans, from me, right, I would put a lot of pressure on Spencer Rattler. I think he needs to play really well this year. I think he needs to play better than he did at Oklahoma, where he lost his starting job. And it's going to be harder playing in the SEC. But nationally, I don't know if that conversation is the same. Because it's, all due respect to the Gamecocks, right? It's not USC or Texas. They don't have that big brand. They don't have the expectations of winning the SEC this year or even competing for such a title. In fact, Vegas still has their win total at like 5.5 or 5. Like, you know, Vegas doesn't even know if they're going to be a bowl team. So the expectations of the program are low. Then you want to talk about replacements. Well, he's coming in for a team that had to start four different guys last year. And they had to put Joyner back at quarterback. They had to bring one of their grad assistants onto the field. So he's not replacing a Rush Limbaugh. He's replacing the guy who failed to replace the legend, in a sense. So you have a program that doesn't have as high of expectations, not as big nationally, not replacing some sort of top-end quarterback. And the other part, too, is for Spencer Rattler, I think already people have kind of bailed on him. I think the pressure he had to endure was a year ago when people were hyping him up to be the Heisman or to be the number one pick. And now no one's having those conversations. So that pressure nationally is not the same for Spencer Rattler as it was a year ago, because people don't really expect that high performance. And they, you know, they've kind of already, that ship has sailed. They've moved on from Spencer Rattler. Oh, you know, we were kind of wrong about him. We thought he was going to be really good. I guess he's not. All right, who are the other top quarterbacks? And everyone's talking about a Caleb Williams and a C.J. Stroud and a Bryce Young And you're not hearing Spencer Rattler's name being mentioned for, you know, the best quarterback in the SEC or a dark horse Heisman candidate. So I don't think he has a lot of pressure nationally. If he goes out there and he doesn't play great, people are just going to say, yeah, you know, we saw that he got benched at Oklahoma. What do you expect? It's the Gamecocks. It's the SEC. It's a lot tougher than the Big 12. So nationally, I don't know if there is a ton of pressure on Spencer Rattler. I'm sure he puts a lot of pressure on himself to try to bounce back. He still wants to be a high pick in the NFL draft, and his stock has cratered over the last 12 months. So I'm sure he internally feels pressure like, I got to go out there and perform and play better. But nationally, I don't know if we're having those conversations. Locally, sure. Amongst Gamecock fans, I see all the hype. People talking, you're excited. You have Spencer Rattler for good reason. But he better perform to some sort of high level to meet those expectations of the fan base. So if we're talking transfer quarterbacks with the most pressure, I gave you my top six. Would Rattler crack the top six? I think we could honestly debate it. I don't know. The pressure may not be all that high on Dylan Gabriel at Oklahoma. Maybe not so much Keaton Slovis at Pittsburgh. It is Pitt at the end of the day. So if I were to put Spencer Rattler in this top six, maybe I'd slot him number five ahead of those two and still behind Jackson Dart and Max Johnson, because Texas A&M and Ole Miss have higher expectations. And also Ole Miss, you have Lane Kiffin calling the plays, and Matt Corral was excellent last year. And for Texas A&M, you got Jimbo Fisher calling the plays, and they have dreams of making it to the playoff, where South Carolina, they have dreams of, you know, just making it to a bowl game, winning seven games in the regular season this year. So if I put him in the top six, I'd probably put him at number five there, behind Caleb Williams, Quinn Ewers, Max Johnson, Jackson Dart, and ahead of Keaton Slovis and Dylan Gabriel. But at least nationally, I don't know if there is a ton of pressure on Spencer Rattler like some of these other guys, like a Quinn Ewers who's supposed to be the savior at Texas, Caleb Williams who's supposed to get USC back in the playoff. For Spencer Rattler, it's like, all right, just, you know, let's have a winning season. We won six games in the regular season last year. Let's be better than that. Those are my expectations. Win seven games this year. That's different than, all right, win the conference and go to the playoff, especially for a USC team that was 4-8 or a Texas team that was 5-7 last year. When we come back, it's time for Trent's Takes. The More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand, search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Last hour, we were wondering if what's happening with the golf world could happen with other sports. Could somebody like the Saudi Arabians with their deep pockets come away and, you know, try to interfere with the NFL and steal talent away and start a competing league, a competitor? Well, I just saw this. John Wall, we know that he opted into his deal. Assuming he plays, let's say, 60 games this upcoming year, and that's probably on the high end. That would give him 100 games played over 4 years. He will have made $171 million over a four-year period by the time next season ends. So, you know, he's already making a ton of money to not play very often. So that's going to be hard to beat with these other sports where golf was a little bit more vulnerable. Something like this occurring. We'll talk with Jeremy Schilling next hour, probably closer to 2:30, and get the lowdown from him on everything going on in the golf world. But we do it around this time each and every day. We find out what's on the mind of the producer. It's time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, before we get into any football, basketball topics, I do have a combat sports topic I would like to throw out there to the universe. So, I don't know if you know the fighter Nate Diaz. He's very polarizing. He hasn't won a fight in the last 5 years. He's relatively old when it comes to the UFC. He was one of the, you know, my favorite fighters to watch because this is a guy whose jaw, he will never fall. He always just stands up. I mean, he's bleeding after every single round. It's unbelievable. Now, Dana White wants to get him back on a UFC card, but they can't work out a deal. So what potentially might happen, there's a YouTuber by the name of Jake Paul who has been calling out Mr. Diaz for quite some time, and he will be hosting a fight at Madison Square Garden on August 6th, Luke Morrow. That's either going to be Tyson Fury's brother, Tommy Fury, who I think personally Jake Paul will knock out in the first couple rounds. If Nate Diaz fights Jake Paul in a boxing match, we might get what the world has been waiting for, Jake Paul on the canvas knocked out. If Nate Diaz and Jake Paul fight, I will bet right now, Luke Morrow, that Nate Diaz will knock him out in 6 rounds, I would think. No doubt. I thought it was going to be Tyron Woodley. They did it twice. Yeah. He knocked him out. Jake Paul knocked him out. It was a big problem for me because I was like, there is no way in the world one of the better strikers in the UFC going up against Jake Paul. Granted, the weight difference was about 30 pounds, so you have to, you know, add that into it. But if Nate Diaz gets up to weight, he already fights around 175. So if he gets up to 190, Jake Paul's head's going on the canvas. There's no doubt about it.
I think a lot of people would like to see that.
Oh, everybody in the world. Are you kidding me? But I will say, like, credit to Jake. Incredibly impressive, like what he's been able to do to knock out everybody he's fought. Granted, he fought a basketball player, a YouTuber, and then Tyron Woodley, five-time UFC champion. But I would say that Woodley is more known for his grappling than he is his striking, even though he is a very vicious knockout artist. But at the same time, he's more known for his grappling. But if Nate Diaz and Jake Paul fight, it's going to be all over but the crying. Just go watch Nate Diaz highlights, folks, because this guy throws absolute bombs. He beat Conor McGregor. That's like the big claim to fame. Conor McGregor went up 20 pounds to go fight him in the, welterweight division, if I'm not mistaken. And they went all 5 rounds, but Nate Diaz beat him up. So I think he's going to do the same to Jake Paul if that happens.
It'll be interesting to see. I don't know if it's true or not, but I know Logan Paul, his brother, said that Jake is broke now because he invested all his money in cryptocurrency.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So if that's the case, he's got to get back in that ring, get some of that guaranteed money for some sort of fight.
Well, good. It's also good for Jake Paul because he has a promotions thing now, much like Floyd Mayweather has. And, I mean, he signed one of the top female boxers in the world, Amanda Serrano, to a big deal. And she fought at MSG a couple months ago. So he's actually doing decent things in the business world when it comes to boxing and fighting for UFC fighter pay, which brings me to the PGA Tour. Yeah. Now, why is it that the PGA Tour just now has an influx of cash to be able to put on massive tournaments when, you know, they've never ever done this before? They've always kept the cash to themselves. Again, $1 billion in revenue year in and year out. Still, the top 50 golfers are only making $1 million a year. Scratch my head at that. That's a little interesting. And now, all of a sudden, when you have a competitor who has all the money in the world, you're going to put on these high stakes events with big purses. I don't understand why they've made this shift. I mean, granted, I do understand it, but why now? You should have been doing this 20 years ago. That would have made golf a lot more interesting if we took the top 50 players in the world in the FedEx Cup standings and put them in for, you know, a $25 million purse. Are you kidding me? That'd be absolutely awesome. Imagine that 10 years ago when Tiger was going and Phil was in his prime and everything like that. That would have been phenomenal. Now it's coming to light because you have somebody with deeper pockets than you that can buy you out at any time.
Yeah, it's like when you go to your boss and bluff your way to a raise, or you say, like, hey, I got somebody else interested, and then they give you more money. It's like, oh, man, how come I could have been making this money all along? Why did it take me threatening to leave for you to actually pay me what I think I'm worth? And similar idea here where these guys, they're not just threatening. They are leaving for the other, for the LIV Golf Series, and now the PGA Tour is like, all right, I guess we're going to have to pony up some money to keep these guys around here. It's a fair question. I wonder, like, how come you weren't doing this before? Where did this money come from? That's a good question. Yeah. Why are you just – why this just suddenly happened now? Why haven't we been doing this for years?
Yeah, it's a weird – I kind of – like you said earlier, compare it to the NCAA a little bit. They got competitors, and now it's like, oh, here we go. We got to, pony up some cash. So it's going to be interesting to see what the PGA Tour does. I still will point out all the hypocrisies, much like Greg Norman did with the Saudi-backed money that is in the PGA Tour when it comes to sponsorships. I know it's a little bit different, but let's not harp on these athletes for trying to go get a payday. I completely understand it. If somebody offered me to go, $50 million to go commentate LIV, I mean, who's turning that down? Not me. I'll tell you that right now, Luke Morrow. You probably feel a little similar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's why I haven't been all that hard on the golfers themselves, because I understand. We can all sit here on our high horses and say, how dare they? But, until you're presented in that situation where someone's offering you life-changing money to work less, it's like, that's hard to turn down. By the way, talking about broadcasting, Nick Faldo's leaving CBS.
Yeah.
And there are rumors maybe he'll be joining as a broadcaster, joining the LIV Golf Series. So we'll see.
Sir Nick, he's leaving. Interesting about the sir. If I saw Nick Faldo in public, I don't know if I'd let the sir slip first, and that'd probably, he'd probably get mad at me.
I would never call him sir in person. It's a little, pretentious. And he's just, hey, Nick, Hey, yeah. Buddy. That's what I
Hey, pal. How you doing? Yeah, a little much there. Now, speaking of a little much, Dan Orlovsky put out his top five quarterbacks under 25 and younger, if you will. Now, I will read through this list, Luke Morrow, and give my thoughts. I'd like to get yours as well. Joe Burrow at number one, I agree with that. Lamar Jackson at number two, I would agree with that. Justin Herbert at number three, I'd probably agree with that. You probably could put him in front of Lamar Jackson, even though Lamar has won a lot more games and has been to the playoffs, unlike Justin Herbert. Four and five are rather interesting to me. Trevor Lawrence is number four on this list with quarterbacks younger than 25. Mac Jones at five. Now, let me point something out real quick. Kyler Murray is under the age of 25. And if you ask me right now, Luke Morrow, I would put Kyler Murray over Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones 10 times out of 10 because I haven't seen enough from these guys. I've seen what I've needed to see when it comes from Kyler Murray. Trey Lance potentially could get into this conversation eventually, but I agree with the top three there. I'd throw Kyler in there at four, probably Mac Jones at five, I would think, but Trevor Lawrence, I mean, what are we doing? He's not top five right now for QBs younger than 25. No way.
That's fair. I don't think I disagree with anything you said. This kind of goes back to the Feinbaum Kirby versus Dabo thing. Are we basing it off of like expectations moving forward or just what we know now?
Right.
Because, yeah, Kyler Murray definitely, like today, better quarterback than Mac Jones than Trevor Lawrence. I'm not a big Kyler Murray guy, so I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of their careers, Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones will be better. So maybe Orlovsky's saying if he could take any quarterback, he'd rather have those guys for the long haul. I get that. If we're talking about today, you have to rank the best quarterbacks right now. I think Kyler Murray should be ahead of those two. And then I agree with you, Mac Jones, I'd probably put ahead of. Mac Jones looked a lot better last year than Trevor Lawrence. I know he's in a better situation, but hey, that's the NFL. Mac Jones played better a year ago. So I would agree with you. Like, if I was putting this list together in terms of right now who's been the best, I'd put Kyler 4, Mac Jones 5, leave Trevor Lawrence out. If I'm trying to forecast the future, maybe I'm being too hard on Kyler. I wouldn't be surprised if Trevor has a better career than Kyler Murray, and maybe Mac Jones if he stays in New England with Belichick. Maybe. I don't know. I'm down on Kyler Murray right now.
There was a big debate this morning that was going on about is Joe Burrow the true number one out of this? And maybe, I don't know, I'm on the hype train, but did anybody watch last season not only the playoff run but his regular season? I mean, he had 5,300 yards, almost 50 touchdown passes, a good touchdown to interception ratio. I think right now, Luke, there is zero argument that Joe Burrow is not the best, you know, number one overall for the 25 and younger crowd. Justin Herbert, there's an argument. He hasn't been to the playoffs yet. I mean, come on. When it matters most, he hasn't shown up. And that's what's most important. Joe Burrow shows up. Lamar Jackson has shown up. I need to see more from Justin Herbert before I give him. Because prototypical quarterback-wise, he's got every gift, every single gift. He can run. He's 6'6", 250 pounds. He's got an absolutely rocket arm. But he just hasn't won enough. And that could go back to the roster. When I look at the roster, we got a pretty dang good roster. I mean, it's tough to, you know, start making excuses when you're throwing to Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, got Austin Eckler in the backfield. It's tough to start making excuses. Hunter Henry catching, you know, from the tight end position. Very difficult for me to put Justin Herbert as the number one. And that was the big argument this morning was, oh, Justin Herbert's, you know, head over heels better than all these guys. I don't see it. As of right now, I don't see it. You have a better roster than majority of the teams in the NFL, and you still haven't made the playoffs. What is that? Is that Brandon Staley, or is it Justin Herbert?
That's a fair point. It makes for more interesting radio to disagree and debate, but I agree with you again on this point. I'm with you. I think Herbert has a better skill set than Joe Burrow, but the big difference has been the success in terms of winning. Burrow took a bad team the year prior to now a Super Bowl appearance. And like you said, Herbert certainly has a playoff roster. He probably has a Super Bowl roster too, and they haven't gotten to the playoffs yet. So I think Herbert, from like an individual perspective, I do think he's more skilled than Burrow, but winning is the most important. Burrow won in college. He's won enough in the NFL to at least get to the Super Bowl. Herbert, Oregon was always kind of a little disappointment. And now in the NFL, the Chargers have been a disappointment. And people always blame the coaches. Mario Cristobal wouldn't unleash Justin Herbert. Brandon Staley's too aggressive. You know, Herbert's been the theme so far. He's got to make the play. The Chargers have to make the playoffs this year, but they're in a very tough division. So I do agree with you. I think Herbert, same idea, could have the better career individually over Burrow, but Burrow has shown the ability to win these big games that I would probably feel more comfortable taking him right now over Justin Herbert.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Look, I mean, when you look at the guys who are catching passes for Justin Herbert, outside of Jamar Chase, I would take Keenan Allen over Tyler Boyd and T. Yeah. Higgins. I'd take Mike Williams over those two guys. I wouldn't take them over Jamar Chase as of right now just because of that connection. And he's probably going to go down as one of the better receivers that we've seen in the last 20 years from all the projections and seeing his teammate Justin Jefferson, as you know, the way that he's produced. Like, I mean, this guy is going to be an all-time great. But I'd take his pass catchers over the second and third option for the Bengals 10 times out of 10 all day long.
Yeah, I agree. Probably better tight end too.
Yeah, right? definitely. And they lost Uzama for the Bengals.
Yeah, right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Better offensive line.
Much better. He was the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. Yeah, they still went to the Super Bowl. Come on.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. That's why I think Herbert, he's got a lot of pressure on him this year. You got to make the playoffs. And when Burrow does what he does, it only makes Herbert look worse, puts more pressure on him. So I don't care. He's in a tough division. They got to find a way to get in this year because they blew it last year. We'll wrap up Hour 2 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 2 of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You can always get in touch with the show. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and you can send a message to the show there. Clarence said, I could see Jeff Bezos wanting to compete with one of the big sports if he wasn't trying to go into space. Amazon could go up against the NFL and have a decent shot of competing against the league if Amazon didn't have the Thursday Night Football deal. The NBA would be a close second with Bezos, as it has a global reach thanks to Jordan and LeBron James. Yeah, the NBA is the most global. That's why the NFL, they're going and playing in other countries. They're trying to get there. So the NBA is global. If you were to pick like a candidate other than the Saudi Arabians, yeah, I mean, you would look at a Jeff Bezos. You'd look at the richest people in the world, or the country at least. He's worth $132 billion. With a B, which is so absurd to try to wrap your mind around. But I just, as we discussed earlier, I don't know how likely it is to really take on one of these other sports. I just gave you the numbers of John Wall's played 40 games over the last 4 years. He's made $171 million in those 4 years. So you talk about for golf, guys are playing less, making more. Well, I mean, John Wall, he's played 40 games. He's averaged 10 games, and he's making $171 million. I think the money is enough that it would take a lot to pull these guys away. And then you also get into the numbers. For golf, it's all individual. You get 40 golfers, you got yourself a tour. For football, you may need at least 8 teams. You got at least 50 guys on a team. You're talking about a lot of money, and they're already making a lot. So you're going to have to throw a lot of money around. And plus, the NFL, a lot more popular than the PGA Tour. Let's be honest. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.